You are listening to Pardes from Jerusalem, the weekly Parsha podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. Are you looking for something meaningful and inspiring to do this summer? Why not consider joining us for our Executive Learning Seminar or our 2 and 3 week summer program options? For more information, visit www.pardes.org.il/programs. This week, Naima Novetsky discusses Parashat HaChodesh and the purpose of Pesach.
This Shabbat is one of the four Shabbatot at this time of year with a special Torah reading. For Maftir, the last Aliyah, in honor of Rosh Chodesh Nisan and the upcoming holiday of Pesach, we read what is known as Parashat HaChodesh from chapter 12 of the Book of Shemot. The section opens by introducing Nisan as the first of the months, but then it focuses specifically on the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach, of the Pesach sacrifice. The Psukim tell us that the people were told that on the 10th of the month, they must take a lamb, v'haya lachem lemishmer arabar seyom lachodesh, which they should keep for 4 days until the 14th, at which time, v'shachatu oto kol kahal adat Yisrael, they would have to go and shacht and kill this lamb, bein harbaim, in the early evening. They take the lamb's blood and they are to smear it on the doorposts of the house in which they are going to be eating it. They are then told very specifics about how to eat this lamb. They must eat it roasted, together with matzah and maror. We're told to highlight the fact that it has to be roasted, it may not be boiled, ki im tzli esh rosho al kerav al kirbo, but rather roasted whole. V'lo totiru memeno ad boker, one is not allowed to leave it over until the morning. V'kacha tochlo to matnechem chagurim, nalechem beraglechem, umakachem yetchem. And finally, you should eat it with your belts girded and your shoes tied and your staffs in your hand, ready to go. We are then told that all of this is going to be happening at the very same time as Makat Becharot, the plague of firstborns. Hashem tells us, "V'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh, I will pass through Egypt on that night. V'hiketi kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim, and I will smite all of the firstborns of Egypt. V'haya hadam lachem la'ot, but this blood that you will smear on your doorposts from this korban, from the sacrifice, will be a sign for you on your houses. V'ra'iti et hadam, and I will see the blood. Upasachti aleichem, and I will pass over you, or perhaps have mercy on you. V'lo yiyah b'chem negesh b'lamashrit, and you will not have a plague for the so-called mashrit, perhaps a decent translation would be destroyer, p'hakoti b'eretz Mitzrayim, as I go and smite the firstborns of Egypt. At first glance, the Pesach sacrifice appears to be a protective ritual, meant to ensure that the Israelites were spared during the plague of firstborns. Thus, there's so much emphasis on the smearing of blood and how this blood will be a sign. Though, of course, the verses are somewhat ambiguous. Who is it a sign for? V'haya hadam lachem la'ot, the blood shall be for you a sign. But at the same time, it says, v'ra'iti et hadam, that the blood is for God. But then it says, so as to prevent the mashrit, whoever this destroyer is, from hurting them. We wonder, why is a sign necessary to save the nation? If the sign is for Hashem, what, Hashem couldn't have passed over their homes even without the smearing of blood? Moreover, who is this mashrit from which they are being protected? How is the blood also for them a sign? In addition, the Paschal ritual includes many aspects besides the highlighted smearing of blood. What role do these play in the ceremony? Why is the lamb taken 4 days before it's slaughtered? Why does it have to be eaten roasted, whole, accompanied by matzah and bitter herbs? Was there any significance to eating it while belted with shoes on and staff in hand? So what we're left with is this question of, what is the purpose of the Pesach? Is it a protective ritual, or is it something more than that? The commentators offer an array of different possibilities. Many do insist that, yes, actually, it is first and foremost a protection right. But if so, they have to ask the question of, if it's a protective right, why was it needed by God? So Ibn Ezra takes this approach and he says, V'yesh omrim shehu siman l'malach ha'over hanikra mashrit. He says, yes, this is a sign It was needed to protect the people's houses so that the mashchit would go over it. But why was it needed? It was needed because the malach, the angel, who's called mashchit, who's called destroyer, he needed the sign. It's not that God needed the sign. The malach himself needed the sign. Rav Yosef Bruchoshor raises the question, well, why does the malach need a sign? So he says, shenitan lo reshut, because he was given permission. V'zeh she'amru rabotinu, and this relates to what our sages said, v'sha'ad dever k'nos raglecha, in a time of plague, go indoors. So what does Rav Yosef Bruchoshor mean by this ambiguous, because it was given permission? The assumption seems to be that angels, unlike God, don't have the same discerning facilities. And sometimes when they're given a command to go and destroy, they're given free rein. And the assumption seems to be here that they were given free rein to destroy. And had there not been a mark, they actually would have killed all that was in their path. The blood was needed for the mashrit itself, for this destroying angel itself, to skip over the homes. Sforno is troubled by this, mainly because he picks up on the verses which seem to suggest that the person, or the being, I should say, that's doing the destroying isn't necessarily the mashrit, but Hashem himself. The pasuk says, "Va'avarti be'aretz Mitzrayim." I will pass through Eretz Mitzrayim, v'hikeiti go'bochor, and I will, meaning God, destroy and smite all of the firstborns. If it's God doing it, then what does God need a sign for? And so he says, Hiketi kol b'chor, on the verse that says God will smite all the firstborns. Afchin ben tipasha b'chor l'tipasha inab shal b'chor. Ani Hashem. He says, I know the difference between one who is a firstborn and one who is not a firstborn. V'loyo ekol zabilti Hashem levado. He says, I'm the only one who could know this distinction between b'chors and non-b'chors, firstborns and non-firstborns, Jewish firstborns and Israelite firstborns and non-Israelite firstborns, is Hashem. He says, but the mashchit that's mentioned in the pasuk is distinct from Hashem and is distinct from the one who is destroying the firstborns. Sforno says that actually, during the plague of firstborns, two different things were going on in Egypt. One, God himself was destroying all the firstborns. God himself would not have needed any of that blood as a sign because he can distinguish on his own. But there was something else going on at the very same time. He says, Milvad makat b'chorot, in addition to the smiting of firstborns, shalach b'shar ha'am, evra v'zam v'tzara mishlachat malachi ra'im, at the same time that makat b'chorot was going on, God sent against the rest of the nation, meaning the non-firstborns as well, all sorts of evil angels and angry people and things that could go and do wrong to those people who are non-firstborns as well. He says that's what's meant by the mashrit. There was some general hashchata, some general destruction going on at the time of the plague of firstborns that wasn't limited to firstborns. That was done by an angel. And lulei ha'psricha she'asah b'chamla to Yisrael lo hayu nimlatim mishar hatzarot. And had God not commanded them to smear blood to be a sign for this angel, yes, they would have been spared the killing of their firstborns because that was done by God, but they wouldn't have been spared all of the destruction done by the quote-unquote mashchit. So this is a very different way of reading the psukim. If for Ibn Ezra and Rav Yosef Bachoshor, the mashchit is the one who's killing the firstborns and is an angel and therefore needs a sign, for Sforno, there's two things going on. God himself smiting the firstborns does not need a sign. And the mashrit, this destroying angel, who does need a sign, but is not bringing death of firstborns, but rather some more general destruction. So that's the first approach. What the first approach doesn't deal with almost at all, though, is all the accompanying rituals that go along with this sacrifice, because it doesn't seem that it's only about smearing of blood, but as we said before, about being eaten roasted, whole, accompanied by matzah and bitter herbs, etc., which leads some people to suggest that maybe we should be looking at this Pesach in a totally different manner. There's a school of thought that suggests actually that we should look at the Pesach as a korban. Okay? It should be considered a sacrifice. And it has many elements of a sacrifice. As we said, there's a killing of an animal. In addition, there's smearing of blood, which in this case might be seen as equivalent to the sprinkling of blood that happens with many other sacrifices. In addition, there's the laws of what we call notar, not leaving anything over. All of that would seem to put into the category of sacrifices. Of course, on the other hand, there are things that don't seem to have anything to do with sacrifices here because we're missing some of the key elements of a sacrifice, such as an altar, such as a kohen, such as a temple. Nonetheless, many suggest, no, this is a sacrifice in which the house has become the altar, the individual has become the kohen. Then the question is just, what type of a sacrifice are we talking about? So Rav David Zvi Hoffman suggests, Mahaya of Yo shel Korban HaPesach. What was the nature of this paschal sacrifice? Mikivat shehu nikra li'itim b'shem zevach. Since sometimes it is called a zevach, hu shmam shel HaKorbanot HaNechalim, which is how other sacrifices which are eaten are called, ubimyuchad shel Korban HaShlamim, he says, and especially the Korban known as a whole burnt offering, a Korban Shlamim, it must be that a Pesach is one type of Korban Shlamim. He says, Achen, ach tiv'ihu shebishat ha'yitziyah l'chayrut. He says, and therefore, it's actually natural that at the time that the nation was going out to freedom, kasher ba'al Yisrael ha'yishua ha'gdula b'yoter shelo zachta ha'oma e'pam, when they were about to get the biggest salvation that the nation had ever merited, yet Kariv Korban Shlamim, he says, actually, it makes a lot of sense that at this juncture, we would be bringing such a Korban, such a sacrifice. Kishem Shahadam Matir Yedei Korban Shlamim Ayishuato, Kitzotza Shel Hit Achduto HaMakadosh Baruch Hu. He says, because if you think about it, in general, what is the significance of a Korban Shlamim? He says, when a person brings a Korban Shlamim, they normally are announcing the salvation that they have received by their being at one with God. So a Korban Shlamim is a Korban which is given partially to God, partially to the Kohen, and partially to the person bringing it. And he says, this to some extent shows this unification of us with God. He says, Kach gam niftacha ha-gula mi-mitzrayim bi-buroro shal Hashem havaya u-bhaftacha ki ayayimcha. He says, so too, at the moment of our redemption in Egypt, Hashem tells us, I will be with you. There is a togetherness here of us with God, God with us. And he says, and therefore, it's a very appropriate Korban to be bringing at this moment of our redemption, our salvation. He says, in addition, it's possible to be viewed the Korban Pesach as a Korban Todah. He says, HaPesach tzirich liot kamo Korban Todah. This offering should be like a thanksgiving offering. B'myuchad b'shvil ha'atzala min ha'mavet b'makat b'charot, especially for the salvation from death at the time of the firstborn that were being killed. So for Rav David Zvi Hoffman, he says, this Pesach shouldn't be seen as so different than other sacrifices. He looks for the most similar sacrifice, finds it in the Korban Shlamim, in a Korban Todah, a thanksgiving offering, and says, when bringing this Korban, Bnei Yisrael showed how they recognize Hashem's salvation, gave thanksgiving for it, and recognized how they are becoming one with God and God becoming one with them. Others similarly suggest that this is like a sacrifice, picking up on different sacrifices. Some actually suggest that it's more like a korban chatat, a sin offering, that the people needed to go and cleanse themselves of sins to be worthy of redemption. While others say it's more like a pidyon haben, a redemption of the firstborn, which was needed in order for the firstborns themselves not to be killed. We had to give something to God for them to be saved. Nonetheless, this approach too has some shortcomings, as it doesn't readily explain many of the other specifics of the Korban, as we said before, and the eating whole, roasted, matzah and maror, etc. Which leads to one last approach, which suggests that somehow this bringing of the Korban was a demonstrative act against idolatry. Since sheep were part of the Egyptian pantheon, these exegetes suggest that the slaughtering of the Pesach served to proclaim Hashem's sovereignty and his supremacy over the Egyptian deities. The different mefarshim, the different commentators who take this approach, do so in one of two ways. For some, the main audience was the Egyptians themselves, and for others, the children of Israel. Let's see what they say inside. Rabbeinu Bachai reads, V'ra'iti et hadam u'pasachti aleichem. I will see the blood and I will pass over them. In hadam monea hanegef velo miniato mevi hanegef. He says the truth is, blood has no possibility to prevent or not prevent any type of plague from coming. So it can be that this is all about smearing blood for protective rights. Aval lamdachah katuv ki mi sheheamin b'kadosh baruch hu emunah shlema. Rather, the text comes to teach us that someone who believes in God, a total belief, the talabo bitchano, and puts his faith in him, v'lo chashash lemat paro v'gzerato, and is not fearful of the decrees of paro, v'zavach b'frahesya, and is willing to publicly bring a korban of Tovat Mitzrayim, of the gods that the Egyptians believed in as gods, and he's ready to go and put that blood on the mezuzot and on his doorposts. This person is a tzaddik. He trusts in God. And therefore, he becomes worthy of being saved. He says, the point of bringing the Pesach was to recognize that the Korban Pesach was seen as a god of the Egyptians. Bnei Yisrael, in order to be saved from Makat Becharot, from the plague of firstborns, in order to be redeemed, needed to show that they were no longer believers in the Egyptian pantheon. How did they do this? By sacrificing the sheep that was seen as a god. Not only that, they publicly made a display of this by putting blood on the doorposts. And the blood then is a sign for all. It's a sign for God that we believe in him. It's a sign for the Egyptians that we're not afraid of smearing the blood of their God on our doorposts. And of course, it becomes a sign for ourselves of our trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chizkuni reads this slightly differently. Same general idea, but slightly differently. And he says, V'kulhem ishtah ayadei shemazal talehu yiratam. He says, again, they're taking this sheep because that was one of the beliefs of the Egyptians. U'biglalo hayu avdim latzon, and they would go and worship it. Says, now they're going to take them, and they say, Tikhu yiratam b'yitchem. They're going to go and see you taking their God, their feared ones, in your hands. V'lo tia behem yicholet lakev etchem. And they're going to realize that they have no ability to prevent you from doing this. For Chizkuni, there's a slight difference in this demonstrative act against idolatry. For Rabbeinu Bachai, this is an announcement of Bnei Israel, of their belief in God, a proof, we might say, that they deserve salvation. For Chizkuni, it's actually an educative tool. This is in order to educate the Egyptians themselves that their gods are not worthy, that their gods are nothing, that their gods that can't prevent themselves from being taken and shechted and killed and their blood smeared for all to see. Either way, whether one says that this is aimed at educating the Egyptians or whether it's aimed at Bnei Israel demonstrating their own loyalty to God, this approach does attempt to take care of many of the other specific laws around it. Some, for example, pick up on the fact that it had to be taken 4 days in advance, that had to be taken specifically towards evening, by saying the whole point was this had to be public. People had to see the sheep being tied up for 4 days with no ability to go and do anything to save itself. The Egyptians would see by that the uselessness of their gods. It had to be done near evening when most people would be about, similar to when we say that we have to light the Hanukkah candle so that many people will see them. So too, this was done at a public time. It had to be roasted, they say, for the same reason. A roasted animal smells enough that everybody around it will notice it. If you boiled it in your house, no one would know that you were killing their sheep. If you roasted it at a public time, people would go and see and smell and know, oh, they're killing my gods. And this works in both ways. One, obviously, for the educative approach, the Egyptians are seeing it. They're realizing the worthlessness, the uselessness of their gods. But it also proves, for the people who suggest that this is actually Bnei Israel's demonstration of loyalty, they're not scared of the Egyptians. They're doing this in public when everyone knows exactly what they're doing. So what about eating it with matzah and maror? So some suggest that this is actually a contrast to idolatrous practices. In general, when idolaters would bring sacrifices, they would accompany their sacrifice with something that's chametz, something that was leavened, and something that was sweet. In order to show that what we're doing is a reaction against them, we specifically bring something that is not sweet, something that is bitter, and we bring it with matzah, we eat it with matzah, something that is not leavened, and don't have any leavening around it. Finally, we're supposed to do this while the animal is whole, once again, so that no one could mistake what you're burning, what you're killing, for anything else. They can't assume that, oh, he just took a chicken for supper. This is obviously a sheep because everyone could see it in its entirety. So what we've seen is three different approaches to the Paschal ritual. One that emphasizes the protective rite and just explains why it would be needed, because perhaps it wasn't God alone who was wreaking havoc that night, but also the so-called mashrit. A second approach that emphasizes the sacrificial element of this Pesach, suggesting that it should be viewed as a korban shlamim, as a korban that shows our thanksgiving to God and our oneness with him. And finally, an approach that suggests that actually it should be seen as a demonstration against idolatry, a B'nai Israel's attestation of their loyalty and faith in God, and perhaps as an educational tool to the Egyptians themselves that they too should learn to recognize God and not their gods with a lowercase g. It is of course possible as well that none of these approaches are mutually exclusive and that there could be elements of all three in the ritual. With that, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom and perhaps prematurely a wonderful Pesach.
For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org.